This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. Even if you didn't grow up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, you probably know your way around it pretty well. From 1968 on, it's been that otherworldly oasis on public television, where the kind man in the cardigan talks to toddlers about their feelings, their fears of the dark, and takes them on trips to see how crayons are made. And then there's the neighborhood of make-believe, a land of puppet shows and mini-operas, populated by King Friday the 13th and Lady Elaine. With his sneakers, his absolutely sincere and leisurely speech, and the unabashedly corny songs, Mr. Rogers invited parodies, and there were many. But as the novelist and Mr. Rogers fan Richard Ford once wrote, "Who but a hardened criminal wouldn't like Fred Rogers?" Last year, after 33 years on the air, Fred Rogers taped his final episode, but the show lives on in reruns. He continues his work with children through his nonprofit organization, Family Communications, Inc., and he has a new book on understanding the young child called the Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers joins us today from his studio in Pittsburgh. You should know he's sitting at his piano. Fred Rogers, welcome to Fresh Air. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you, Barbara.
You write about a lot of everyday things. You also write about some pretty profound issues in parenting, about children's fears. I'm remembering a show you once did about how a child cannot go down the drain in the bathtub. You had a whole show about that.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds funny, but you're really meeting kids on their own level. That's a real fear. Did a child write to you, and is that where you got the idea for that?
A child played that out in front of me one time. Making a character, trying to see if that character could go down a tube, you know, just a plain, ordinary tube. And I found out that it had to do with the drain in the bathtub. That child was petrified when his parent pulled the plug while he was still in the tub. And so consequently, we wrote a song about that, you know. You can never go down, can never go down, can never go down the drain. And then it goes on, you're much bigger than the water, much bigger than the soap. And it's true, but children don't know that when they hear this loud rush of the flush of water in the bathroom. They think they might be sucked down the drain. And so just to talk about it, people were very surprised that I would show a bathtub drain as well as a toilet drain and just say, you see, you could never go down such a small thing. Well, there were many children, I think, who breathed a sigh of relief just to be able to talk about it.
Can we talk about discipline? For a moment, you hear a lot that parents aren't disciplining their children enough now, that they're not setting limits and they're not being consistent about rules that they do have. Is that your experience looking back over your long work with kids? Are more parents dropping the ball on disciplining their children?
You know, Barbara, discipline is a kind of love. If children didn't have limits from those who cared about them, they would never feel that they were loved. If a child ran out into the street, for instance, and nobody screamed and says, come back, or nobody ran after that child would think that nobody loved him. So healthy limits, which children understand, are a marvelous way of saying, I care about you. I don't know about the numbers of people who give comfortable limits to their children anymore. I know that my grandchildren receive them all the time. But things that are clear, if children know why we're asking them to do things, they often are very happy to do them, especially if they feel that it is consistent with our family values. Children love to belong. And if they know that this is the way our family does things, then they'll want to be part of it.
At the end of the day, and I mean that both literally and figuratively as a parent, what I find hardest is not losing my temper. Now, you at least, as Mr. Rogers in the neighborhood, never lost your temper. But were you like that as a parent? You had two sons. You know, after a long day in the neighborhood, what would set you off?
You know, I have a very modulated way of dealing with my anger. And I never felt that it was to anybody's advantage to scream and yell at people. I think, sure, I'd get angry. But there were ways that I had of dealing with my anger. Like, yeah. You know, I'd go to the piano and let it out. And also, I'm a daily swimmer. And I notice that people who have a regime of exercise have wonderful ways of dealing with their feelings. And I don't mean that it's not appropriate for people to express anger in loud ways. But I am saying that it doesn't help anybody if you don't let them know through words. I mean, children are going to mimic what the adults in their lives do. And so the kinds of ways that you have of expressing your anger will probably be the kinds of ways that your children will express theirs. And that's not all bad. But I do think that it's very important for us to be upfront with our children and give them words for their feelings. That's why, what do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? You know, that's one of the songs we sing in the neighborhood a lot. Anger can be very frightening.
Now, somewhere I read that your wife said you were always so incredibly stoic and patient with your children, but that she yelled like a fishmonger. So she ended up being the disciplinarian, the ogre.
She was never an ogre, and those two sons of ours are crazy about her. In fact, she's off playing a concert right now in Atlanta.
She's also a pianist, a concert pianist.
She is. She's part of a two-piano team. But Joanne is a very real person. And she would never have been an ogre. She would have been upfront with exactly what she thought, told the kids, okay, that's it, cut it out. You know, and she gave them very comfortable limits. So they knew what was acceptable and what wasn't. And I backed her up.
Fred Rogers is my guest. He's the longtime host of the children's television show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on PBS. I have to ask you about the sweaters, and I'm sure you were asked about the sweaters that you wore on the show many, many times. But I understand your mother knitted most of them until her death.
She did. Mother was a great knitter. She would carry her knitting bag wherever she went. And she made a sweater a month. And at Christmas time, she would give 12 sweaters to this sort of extended family of ours. And invariably, she would say, okay, here's your sweater for Christmas, and here's the pattern book. Tell me which one you want for next year. Of course, I know the one Freddie wants. He wants the one with the zipper down the front. Well, I have all of those sweaters, and we used every one that she ever made for me. But that's been kind of a trademark, hasn't it? The sweater and the sneakers. And the sneakers came about because I had to run across the studio floor to get from the puppet set to the organ when I was doing the children's corner. And so the sneakers just became, I didn't want to make a lot of noise by running in other shoes.
I'm speaking with Fred Rogers. He's, of course, the longtime host of the children's television show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on PBS. He has a new book. It's called the Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk some more. This is Fresh Air. I'm talking with Fred Rogers, the longtime host of the children's television show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on PBS. What were you like as a kid?
I was an only child for 11 years, Barbara, and I had to make up a lot of my own fun.
I think you were sickly often, right? You had a lot of childhood diseases?
I had every imaginable childhood disease, even scarlet fever. And so whenever I was quarantined, and you know, they used to quarantine people for chicken pox and all of those things, I would be in bed a lot, and I certainly knew what it was like to use the counterpane as my neighborhood of make-believe, if you will.
You mean
I had puppets.
The window? You would use, what, finger puppets or shadow puppets or what?
And things on the bed. I would put up my knees, and they would be mountains, you know, covered with the sheet. And I'd have all these little figures moving around, and I'd make them talk. And I can still see my room. And I'm sure that was the beginning of a much later neighborhood of make-believe.
Was King Friday the 13th one of your childhood characters, or Lady Aberlin, or Lady Elaine?
The king probably had his genesis there, but it wasn't that particular name, because it was a child who helped us form that name, King Friday the 13th. A child had been told that Friday the 13th was a very bad day, and he was afraid of those Friday the 13ths. And so I just said one time, why don't we have a character whose name is Friday the 13th, and he celebrates his birthday every time a Friday lands on the 13th.
Oh, that's
of the
so
month.
Unfair.
and so his birthday, King Friday's birthday, is always every Friday the 13th. And I hear from people all over the world. It's a joyous occasion for us. It might be otherwise for those who haven't been enlightened by the neighborhood. But
this is King Friday the 13th. I must explain a few things to Miss Beebe.
Yes, you're certainly welcome, King Friday.
Friday the 13th is a fine day, and may you not say otherwise. Thank you.
Oh, it's taken me back. Now,
well, this is Lady Elaine Toots. You ask about me, and I'm mighty glad you did. Have you ever been to my museum go-round? Well, you'll find everything that you could ever want in any one of those rooms.
Oh, this is X the Owl. You seem to be speechless, Barbara.
So true.
I'm just flying around here looking for you. There's Daniel Tiger over at his clock. Did you want to say hello to him? I mean, he's awful shy.
So,
well, I am shy, but But I would like to say that I'm glad you're having fresh air.
Oh, thank you for that. So is that how you spent the weeks when you were in your bed as a kid, making up voices?
Yeah, voices for puppets and all kinds of stories. And then when I was 11 years old, my sister came, and then I wasn't an only child anymore.
Now, I think I also read that you were overweight as a kid. Did kids make fun of you? And is that part of what made you kind of a sensitive guy before it was fashionable?
Yeah, maybe so. When I was probably in the fourth and fifth grades, I was really quite fat. And it's the same way with my older grandson. And just recently, he did the same thing that I did when I started adolescence. And he's just turned 13. He grew so fast and so tall that he is now quite thin, just the way I am. You know, I weigh 143.
So did you have ways of coping with being the outsider kid, or... I mean, it sounds like you were probably shy because of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think I'm still shy. I was concerned about coming to talk with you today. I want things to be right. I want them to be good. I worry if I make big mistakes. And that's quite a burden at times. But of course, it can help when you're doing work that you feel is so important.
When you were in college, you studied music composition, and you also got a degree in child development, and you became an ordained Presbyterian minister. But after all those trying out, I guess, all those avocations, you went back to TV after that. Why didn't you pursue any of those other interests, music or the ministry?
Well, I feel that it's all wrapped up in what we do with the neighborhood and what we do with all of the things that we publish. That every part of who you are comes out in whatever assignment you have. But when I was ordained in the church, the ordination read like this: you are to continue your work for families and children through the mass media. So, you know, what better than to have these different identities and be able to wrap them all in the service of children and their families. I think that that's when I really knew who I was. When, you know, I loved drama and I loved music and I loved puppetry and I liked television and I liked philosophy and religion, but the moment I realized that all of those could be used in the service of children and their families, that's when I knew who I was.
Now, did you have a model for your Mr. Rogers persona, the perfect adult, and someone you knew, maybe your father, your grandfather?
Well, my grandfather McFeely used to say things to me, the kinds of things that I would say to the children on the air. We would visit him at his farm every Sunday. We'd go out there for dinner.
McFeely as in Mr. McFeely on your show.
Exactly, yeah. And that's my middle name. And that was my mother's maiden name. But we would go to his farm for dinner on Sunday, and invariably he'd take us for a walk, around the grounds and say things like, I'm so glad that you come. And when we leave, he would say, you've made this day a special day. Things like that, you know, that just your being yourself is what matters to me. And he would take me fishing, and he was a wonderful person.
Fred Rogers. His new book is The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. We'll continue our conversation in the second half of the show. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. Let's continue our interview with Fred Rogers. After 33 years hosting the children's show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on PBS, he taped his last episode last year. Now the show lives on in reruns. This summer, Fred Rogers received a Presidential Medal of Freedom award for his work with children. He has a new book, The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. You worked with the people on your show for decades. Many of them stayed for decades, right? And I was thinking that when people work together on a television show for so long, they often play some practical jokes on each other on the air just to keep things interesting. What kinds of pranks happened on the set of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood? Did they ever, you know, sprinkle itch powder in your sweater or anything?
No, but there were times when they put rolled up newspaper in the toes of my shoes so that when I was singing the goodbye song, I would try to get on my shoes, and of course they were much too small for me to get into. So the camera didn't show the shoes those days, and I was going out with my heels over the backs. And then one time there was this blown-up, voluptuous lady made out of rubber in a huge one in my closet when I opened at the end of the program to put my sweater back in the closet. Here was this lady waiting for me.
What did you do?
We taped it over. But you couldn't do that in the days of live television. And, of course, that's the way we began. We began a daily program, an hour a day, live, and we did that for 8 years. And that was called The Children's Corner with Josie Carey. And I did the puppets and the music for that program. And it was all ad-lib and live. And a most wonderful way of learning how to talk when the red light went on.
I have to get you to tell this story. I understand once the actor Michael Keaton was on your show. You had many celebrities on the show, but he made a little bit more mischief than most.
Michael worked with us on the studio crew before he ever went to Hollywood. And he was in charge of the trolley, the movement of the trolley in my room, and also picture-picture. And so there's a little sliding door right under picture-picture where I put in the tape. And so
this is the magic picture projector, right?
It
has
a projector,
slot.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And one day I opened the slot to put the tape in, and I heard this voice say, I'm ready to hear your confession, son. Well, that was Michael. And those are the kinds of things that he's just a wonderful person.
There have been many spoofs of Mr. Rogers, as I'm sure you know, over the years. Eddie Murphy's on Saturday Night Live is perhaps the best known spoof. I remember National Lampoon also had a skit based on your show. What did you think of those? How did you feel about the ribbing you got over the years?
I think most of them were done with a great deal of affection. I remember meeting Eddie Murphy for the first time over at the RCA building. And he came out of his office, and I was walking down the hall, and he put his arms around me, and he said, "The real Mr. Rogers." And Mr. Carson, when I was with him one time, he said, "You know, Fred, we would never do these takeoffs about you if we didn't like you. We wouldn't care about making you famous." There have been some that have concerned me, though, Barbara. And one we learned of, and this was on local television, somebody dressed up in a sweater and sneakers and talked, they said, even more slowly than I talk. I did not see this, but he pretended that he was I. And he said, "Now, boys and girls, I want you to take your mother's hairspray and your daddy's cigarette lighter and press the buttons together, and you'll have a blowtorch." Well, he was meaning to be funny, you know, but it was done in the afternoon. So if any child, even one child, would have gotten the notion that that was something that we had condoned and had tried such a thing, such a sexist thing, for one thing, that would have been disastrous. And so we were able to know about that because a family that watched the neighborhood wrote to us and told us about it. So we got it taken off the air.
It's been wonderful to have you at the piano while we've been talking. Perhaps you could sing something for us or play something for us. Maybe not necessarily a children's song, but something you play for your enjoyment to take us out.
Such a good feeling, a very good feeling, the feeling you know that we're friends.
Oh, Mr. Rogers, thank you so much for talking today on Fresh Air.
Thank you, Barbara. Wish you well.
Fred Rogers. His new book is the Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. This is Fresh Air.